Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're crushing morning miles or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.
Welcome in to another edition of the Future Sox Roundup. My name is Elijah Evans, joined by my co-host Jeff Cohen, and we are back. We are 3 months into the baseball season, which is crazy to think about. It feels like it's really flown by here so far, as we're kind of at the halfway point here this week of the minor league baseball season, and then we're approaching in 2 weeks the all-star break of the major league season. So everything's kind of getting going. July is about to get crazy as we record here on June 30th. We're 2 weeks out from the draft, less than 2 weeks out. Yesterday was 2 weeks from the MLB draft kicking off. We are 2 weeks out of the All-Star game, and then just about a month out of the trade deadline. July, as we've said, is one of the biggest months in the baseball world for sure. And we're excited. There's a lot of fun stuff to come. Jeff, how are you?
Doing good, Elijah. You know, this is a great time for us to do the podcast because we can look back at the month of June and take a bigger look at who's doing well, and I think people are going to be, you know, surprised by some of the top performers. I did a double take on a couple of them.
Yeah.
Along with, of course, some of the usual suspects who continue to perform well.
Yeah, 100%. It's a fun little group here. There's some ups and downs, of course, from some of the top prospects. Definitely, I appreciate that in the comments. And we're just we're just keeping it rolling here. Full transparency with everybody. I have been super swamped the past week or two. Have not been as tapped in as Jeff on the White Sox farm. So definitely going to lean on Jeff a little here. It's been cool, but definitely a challenge for me as I get into the call up, which is our prospect podcast over at Just Baseball, where I'm doing all teams. So now trying to manage and track 30. Teams of prospects instead of one has definitely been a new layer in addition to other responsibilities I've had. So trying to keep up with prospects all over the league has been a little crazy for sure. But definitely always got room for my White Sox, of course, our White Sox. You know, that's the number one team forever for me at least. So we're making sure that happens. But yeah, we'll take it as it goes today. If anybody has any interest or, you know, any particular people they want to hear about, throw it in the comments for sure, and we'll get to that. We don't have quite as much of a full agenda as we usually do, but we're going to just kind of go through the levels, and Jeff's going to talk about some guys he's been seeing in person. We're going to go through who's been kind of just showing out, and definitely want to give a little bit of shout to the ACL and the DSL. The White Sox rookie ball teams are sneaky good, Jeff. I don't know how much you've looked at the numbers. We over the past few years, when we look at stuff, generally both the Arizona League and the Dominican League for the White Sox have been pretty poor in recent years. I think there's been pretty minimal, you know, positive outcomes from both those teams in the past couple of years. And you look at it right now, and the White Sox organization has a winning record in the Arizona Complex League and a 10-10 record in the Dominican Summer League. So it's kind of cool. It's fun to see these teams playing, you know, a little bit better and seeing some pretty impressive prospects at the very lowest level of the farm system. And I'll touch on a few of those guys at the end of the episode today. But why don't we start with Charlotte? We don't need to talk too much Chicago. I think the biggest guy in Chicago, Jeff, just to mention here, is Kyle Teal. I mean, Kyle Teal has looked really good of late, and that's been super fun in Chicago. Kyle Teal is starting to show kind of what he was really showing there at the end in Charlotte, where he started to really just have that couple weeks in Charlotte where he looked like he could be a stud. And now you've got a situation with him in his last 15 games. He's getting on base at a 400 clip. He's hitting .311 in those last 15 games. I mean, he's on base percentage in his last 30 games at this point. I mean, obviously he's only played what? He's played 15. Oh, he's played 15 games. I don't know why I'm saying last 15. But his last handful of games, especially, you know, the last week, he's hitting .409 in that span. So pretty interesting stuff from Teal there. But anybody else you wanted to give a shout to at the major league level before we get into Charlotte?
Well, it's hard not to at least mention Grant Taylor.
Right, of course.
Given how they're using him extensively and he's stepping up. It's really exciting to see as much reservation as we had about him moving out of a starter's role. He's so dominant in the bullpen.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's hard not to love it, of course, obviously, from the perspective of people that, you know, I've been preaching Grant Taylor's talent for a year and a half now, right? Like that is that is something where it's like, okay, that's a guy I still am very curious to see what happens with the situation, the dynamics of his future. But in the present, Grant Taylor is the best reliever on the White Sox, and could very easily, I put this out on Twitter the other day, like, he could easily be the closer and one of the better closers in baseball next season for the White Sox. If you look at what he's doing right now, I mean, every single number jumps off the charts. The combination of stuff and control is just pretty remarkable for a guy that's, you know, less than about a year or so coming off since when he came off of TJ in the minor leagues, right? He's pitched like a handful of minor league games, and then now here he is being the best reliever on a major league team, right?
Yeah, pretty exciting. Robert just went on the IL. Who is going to take his roster spot?
It should be Brooks. This is somebody, Adrian, shout out Adrian, our guy at Future Sox. Like, I don't see why it wouldn't be Brooks Baldwin. I don't know if you looked at this one, Jeff, but like, Brooks Baldwin in the past 30 days in Charlotte has a 1240 OPS. I mean, what are we doing here? Like, I was on a Addison to 35th with Herb Lawrence the other day and yesterday, and I was telling him, like, at what point do you just say, okay, this guy may not be a big league everyday player. Sure. If he's at least a big league utility piece, I would rather see that getting innings every day than a lot of guys on the White Sox roster. And especially now that you have your center fielder out and they've been putting Brooks Baldwin in center field in the minors, getting him those reps in the outfield, right? So like, if he's looked decent in the outfield, I think that's a big part of him being in Charlotte still is getting those outfield reps, because they see more of a path to future playing time for him in the outfield, which is true. I do think that Baldwin being able to play outfield is a big step for him. But at this point, like, okay, he makes a couple errors in center field while Luis Robert is out. So what? Again, like, this is not like, okay, fine. Let him learn at the big league level. If he messes up a little bit, that's okay. But at the end of the day, I think that Brooks is ready for more big league pitching, because he clearly is too good to face, you know, Charlotte.
No, I agree. You know, when I pulled all the stats, it's just, I mean, his numbers were otherworldly.
Yeah, it's silly.
387 batting average, 453 OBP. 12 right. extra base hits, including 8 home runs in the month of June. I mean, it's insane. What he's doing in Charlotte's crazy.
Yeah, it's pretty nuts. He has just been lighting the ball on fire. I mean, it's been crazy. I think that he's probably the most likely guy. You could see like a Corey Yolks get added to the 40-man. He's been pretty good this season in general, but like, you could see there's a couple other guys that I could see making that appearance and on the roster. But at the same time, I'd rather see Brooks at this point. I think that he'd be the best fit for that roster spot coming into tomorrow. We'll see what happens though. Should we get into Charlotte? Let's do it.
Yeah, let's do it.
So we just hit the big one, right? We hit the big one, which is Brooks Baldwin, right? I think offensively, I'm not sure, you know, there's anybody else that stood out more than Brooks Baldwin, but
take it away. Well, Colson really had quite the week and had a really solid month. You know, just looking at the monthly numbers, 281 batting average, 338 OBP, and a 1.010 OPS with 11 extra base hits. So, I tell you what, got to hand it to Ryan Fuller and the trip to Arizona.
Yeah, I think
more and more like a changed player.
Yeah, I mean, Colson is not a perfect player, and there's definitely still things to continue to work on for him. I still think the strikeout rate you want to see come down a little bit. You know, he's starting to walk a little bit more, but I still think you would like to see that walk rate tick up a little bit. But, you know, with this past huge week or two, like, it's really only a matter of time at this point, I think, Jeff. I got to tell you, I think that it's pretty close. I think we're getting pretty close to seeing him in the big leagues, because at this point, you've got Grant Taylor up, you've got Meidroth up, you've got Caro and Teal, you're going to have Brooks Baldwin back. At some point, it's just like, okay, you know, tip your cap. He's made the adjustments he's needed to make. You put the first half, the first month or two of the season in the past, and you say, you know, look, this guy is performing right now. I mean, since that reset, heading back down to Arizona, right? So since he came back to Charlotte on May 13th, about a month and a half ago, since then, you're looking at a 137 WRC plus at Charlotte. You know, obviously that's scaled by park factors, right? So that negates the aspects of Charlotte being a bandbox, right? With that WRC plus number, a 954 OPS in that span, you get the walk rate ticking back up. You know, the walk rate's at 8.5. You want to see a guy like Colson walking at a 10% clip. And I think that an 8.5% you can live with. The strikeout rate's still 27.7, which is higher than you'd like, for sure. But if you can keep that under 30, you have at least a chance to succeed at the next level. I still think when Colson does get that Dick call up, he's going to have some growing pains. I think you're going to see some pretty rough stretches for him in his first year, maybe even 2 years in the big leagues. But that's part of the maturation process. And that's part of, you know, what he's kind of gone through the past year or two is it's not going to be the clean, amazing transition to the big leagues that some people may have dreamed on. And the harsh reality is that that only happens for a handful of prospects. I mean, Chase Burns just gave up 6 runs and got 1 out today. And that's the second best pitching prospect in baseball, right? I mean, that's what happens. It's not easy. You look at Roman Anthony, who's just now starting to find his groove after 3 weeks of not hitting anything and not getting on base. He was making good contact, you know, but that's the top prospect in baseball, right? So it's going to be interesting to see when Colson reaches the league. But what you can say is he's put together a really nice month here, and particularly the past week or two, really looks like the Colson that we know and love.
Yeah. I agree with you. I think everyone is kind of on board now with he needs to be in Chicago. And yeah. You know, it could be one more good week. It could be that soon. One more solid week, and off he goes.
Yeah, it also could be till the deadline. I think that the deadline would make some sense, just because I think that you would like to give the opportunity to get some guys off the roster, right? I think the optimal scenario is that you get some of this, you know, I don't want to call it dead weight, but dead weight off the roster, and then you get a guy like Colson in there where you have Colson and Meidroth and Brooks playing every single day in that middle infield, in the outfield, if you want to shift Brooks in there, right? Like, I mentioned this many times, but like Caro and Teal, like, I want to see them every day. I know Edgar hasn't been great. I know he's had his ups and downs so far, but like, I just don't need to see DH at bats going to Austin Slater and you know, Michael A. Taylor and Benintendi so that you can put Taylor in the outfield. Like, I know Benintendi's not a great fielder, but like, Benintendi's fine in left field. He'll be okay. Like, he will survive in left field. And those DH at bats, instead of going to him because of Taylor or Slater or whatever going into the outfield, can then go to Caro or Teal when the other one's not catching. I mean, Edgar Caro, I think, has like 1 start in the past 4 days or 5 days. And it's just like, you know, what do you... Yeah, he's had his ups and downs so far, but I'm not sure what you expect to for a guy in his third month in the league for a 22-year-old guy when he's not getting at bats consistently. So it just is like, I think that the organization is already trending that direction. And I do think that post deadline, we're going to see this roster just really dive into the youth even more with Colson, with Tomelko, potentially with some other guys making their way into the roster.
Yeah. I'm really not that exercised about it. I'm very confident that the guys in place know what they're doing. They're aggressive with these promotions. And, you know, I think Grant Taylor's a great example of that. Noah Schultz, a lot of these guys, they're moving guys through the system. They're giving guys their shots at the big league. And I think Colson will be up there soon enough. And I think they're going to clear out, you know, what you call the dead weight with the veterans, the guys who are not part of the future. But yeah, I have no doubt that that's going to happen.
Yeah, I'm with you. A couple other guys in Charlotte that I could see getting some roster time, depending on the turnover of the roster. Andre Lapicius has been pretty good, actually, all season in Charlotte. That's a guy who's not necessarily a prospect, but, you know, his past 16 games throughout the month of June, a 948 OPS in that span, 6 home runs, only 9 strikeouts in those 16 games. He's been good. He's been good all season, honestly. He's not getting every day at bats, but, you know, this is a good point. Somebody just made the point that, you know, I know the 40-man is one short, and they're saying maybe it's for Colson, and it could be. It could be. It wouldn't shock me for sure. But, you know, I think that it's either way, we're going to see that soon enough. I would like to see some of these other guys get a shot at some point soon. On the, you know, rest of Charlotte's roster, nobody super standing out in terms of, you know, very impressive, right? I think you've seen some ups and downs, some okay games from Brian Ramos, but not necessarily pushing the agenda for a call up yet. Tristan Gray has been pretty good. There's another kind of vet guy who's in Charlotte that's been hitting well. So you've got guys like Gray, you've got guys like Lapicius who could fill a roster spot. But I'm not sure that you're going to get much out of those guys at the big league level. Maybe you give them a shot once you move on from a couple guys at the deadline. But on the pitching side, anybody in Charlotte that's calling your name?
Just wanted to circle back for a second with Rama. Yeah. You know, I thought he was showing progress. And
he was.
There are times he has looked good, but the June numbers were really, really underwhelming. He hit 194 for the month with 4 extra base hits. So still a work in progress there. On the pitching side, I think we need to at least mention Iriarte, that ever
That's
since
gonna, yeah.
he went to Arizona and came back after working with Brian Bannister. 6 walks to 17 strikeouts for the month, 12 innings, 7 hits, 3 earned runs. So a dramatic improvement from what we saw earlier.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, he was in Arizona for a handful of months. He's not pitching in games for a little bit. Since he came back to Charlotte in June, you're right. It's been pretty solid out of the bullpen. Only 7 hits allowed across those 12 innings. No home runs, which Uriarte, that was a big problem for him, was getting beat by the long ball last year and just leaving stuff over the middle and having it get taken deep, especially in a place like Charlotte. But, you know, 9 innings out of the pen with not a home run given up and only 7 hits, especially those walks staying down around 6, like that's a lot of progress for Uriarte. I think he's going to be in the pen, right? I mean, this bullpen's like become sneaky fun in Chicago. You got Grant Taylor, yeah. You've got a number of these other young guys in that bullpen. And I think once you get Uriarte in there and maybe even, you know, potentially some guys that have struggled a bit of late, but you still have a handful of other guys who could get into that mix from the bullpen, whether it's, you know, Frazier Ellard coming back to Chicago. I think there's a number of other guys who could make their way back into the mix in Chicago, right? So you've got a pretty fun bullpen here down the stretch. Or is Ellard back in Chicago? I mean, he's still on rehab, I think. But, you know, you've got a pretty good number of guys who could be pretty fun in this bullpen, and that's led by Grant Taylor, obviously. But I think Uriarte, that's another guy who I think post-deadline, right? I don't think there's any reason for him to be in Charlotte past the deadline if he's still kind of pitching where he's at right now.
No, absolutely. Another guy that we've talked a lot about being in Chicago is Peyton Paulette. He had a bit of a rough month, and I'm torn. You know, there's a part of me that wished he had gone straight to Chicago from Birmingham, but, you know, AAA is a better test. I mean, there's some proven hitters.
The positive side of Paulette, and I looked at this because I looked at the numbers from the month are pretty ugly, but then his last 5 outings have actually been very solid. So turning it around well after, I think, that early June is when he got hit hard a couple games. But his last 5 outings, you know, seven innings across the last 5, 4 hits, 1 walk in that span, only 1 run allowed, 8 strikeouts. So his last 5 outings, you know, the past 2 weeks have actually been very strong. So I think Paulette is a guy that, it's an interesting example you bring up there, because I think he easily could have gone straight to Chicago like Taylor and it would have been fine. I think he would have been decent in Chicago, honestly. But now, you know, after 5 straight games of pretty good outings in Charlotte, I think that, you know, somebody going down with an injury or whether it's the deadline, whatever comes sooner, kind of, I think Paulette will get a shot. So, I mean, look out for the White Sox bullpen, Jeff, because honestly, like, the more I think about it, it's like you look at this roster in the bullpen right now. Even if you are to move a couple guys, I think that cashing in on a Steven Wilson could be a good idea. I think he's been the most consistent reliever in the bullpen this year. Even if you don't, though, you've got a few more years of control. If you want to stick with Wilson, sure. Regardless of what they do with Wilson, you've got all of a sudden, you know, Grant Taylor, Mike Vassell has been a very, very pleasant surprise this season. And then Tyler Gilbert has looked good since coming back off injury. You've got Dan Altavilla, who you might be able to flip at this point, actually, which would be kind of crazy if you could flip a vet like him. But then beyond that, if you had Paulette and Uriarte and maybe even an Addison Coffey or a Frazier Ellard into this bullpen, you're looking at I don't want to say good, but like a pretty solid bullpen, honestly, and a lot of young, fun arms, especially if Uriarte, Paulette, and Taylor in that pen would be pretty electric, honestly.
Yeah, it's fun to dream on. There is a big upside there. Before we move on from Charlotte real quick, Mike Clevinger, possible trade candidate. He's the best starter we have in Charlotte, and I think he could bring back something as desperate as teams are. I mean, you got starters.
Yeah.
I mean, not a big return, but let's, you know.
Yeah, I'm sick of the Mike Clevinger experience. I get it. I hear you. He's been really good in the past since he transitioned back into being a starter. His last 4 starts, 4 runs allowed in those 4 starts. I didn't even mention Wilkelmin Gonzalez, who got optioned, but I think he'll be back in Chicago at some point as well. So that's another great shot. I mean, if you got Wilkelmin, Paulette, Taylor, you know, Uriarte, that's a Vassell. That's a pretty fun bullpen. But yeah, Clevinger, if you can get anything for him, awesome. I don't think they will. I think realistically, you'd have to show it in the bigs to get any return. And at that point, you're sacrificing innings for, I mean, maybe you give him a few starts in Chicago, and if he has a few good starts, you flip him. But I don't think you're getting anything for Clevinger.
Okay. And then I had a question about Jesse Schultens. He's on the rehab list, but he hasn't pitched since June 4th.
That is a good question. I was wondering the same thing because he made a couple outings there. And then I don't see him. He's not on the IL still. He's still technically listed as a rehab assignment, but I think he's dealing with something.
Lower back, Ian.
No, I think that's relating to Nastrini, who is on the IL.
Oh, okay. Nastrini is back along with Varland.
Is he back? Yeah. So that's Varland would be nice too to see. I mean, that's another guy who could get into the pen. But yeah, Schultens, it's an interesting one. I actually don't know what's up with Jesse Schultens because I really haven't seen anything anything from him. So curious to see what's going on there with Schultens. He might be back at some point, but it's been a little while. I don't expect much this season.
Yeah. Just curious.
Yeah, for sure. Shall we head down to Birmingham?
Absolutely. Do you want to talk about a couple of surprise hitters, or do you want to talk about some steadily surprising but less so every start starters?
Let's go into the pitching first, and then we'll get into the hitting. A couple hitters in Birmingham, not much to mention hitting wise in Birmingham. But I mean, pitching starts with Tanner McDougal, Jeff. This is. I am just pretty floored by what Tanner McDougal's doing. I wouldn't say floored because I expected it to a degree, because of the fact that, you know, the stuff was always there. Ian's been saying this. We've been saying this. Ian Eskridge has been saying it more than anybody, but like the stuff has always been there for McDougal. It's just like every start he makes, you just see the maturation more and more and more with him. His first three starts in Birmingham now, you know, 15 and a third innings, three runs allowed, six walks, 23 strikeouts. It's just so impressive every day. And I do think he's going to keep rising up. And every time I go to my top 30, because I'm like, you know, we're only, what, 2 or 3 weeks out probably after the draft from starting to do, you know, our top 30 updates. Every time I look at my list, I'm like, should he really be behind that guy? Nope. Should he really be behind that guy? Nope. And I keep rising him up. I keep moving him up, and it's hard not to, because it's easy to get the fatigue and to look at last year and look at what he's done the past couple seasons and how slow it's come along for him. And then you remember that he's 22 years old and you've got a fastball in the, you know, somebody just asked this, you got a fastball in the upper 90s. You've got one of the better curveballs you're going to see in the minor leagues at some point. So you're working on two pitches that are already elite. He's mixing and matching other stuff in addition to that, right? So it just is such a fun arsenal for McDougal that I'm just so, I know Ian says this about the curveball, right? Like you the curveball's always been beautiful, right? It has not been at the same level of command as it is this season. And beyond that, the fastball is holding its velo better than he ever has and commanding in the top of the zone. When you've got a high 90s fastball at that level with the movement it's got on it and his fastball and the life it's got on it in the top part of the zone, and then you're balancing that off of a downer curveball the way his is, it's one of the better sequences in baseball from a tunneling perspective. And Tanner does it at an incredibly high level and is doing that this season. It's just so fun to watch him pitch right now. And I think he's, you know, he's a borderline top 10 guy in the system at this point, because what he's doing right now, if he was a college guy at 22 years old, we'd be talking about him as one of the top 5 or 6 prospects in the system probably, right? But he had to go through those four years of maturation throughout his, you know, since being drafted as an 18-year-old, right? He's gone through it and he looks like an absolute stud.
So last week, you and Dylan did a compared top 30s at this point. Where did you have Tanner?
So I have Tanner at, I believe, 13, but it might get higher, honestly. I really am not sure how it cannot get higher just because of how exceptionally good it's been in the past, you know, number of – I have him at 14 right now, actually looking at my list, but like the changeup, yeah, exactly. It's just been so good. And a little sneak peek, me and Ian are talking to Tanner next week. So we're going to have a little interview with Tanner, hopefully at some point next week, which would be great to get some insight into what the development he's gone through and just kind of where his mindset's at with everything. He's just been so fun to watch, Jeff. And in Birmingham, you know, some guys get up to that level and they might have some ups and downs. And he's not. I mean, he's just doing everything he was doing and then some in Winston-Salem. So exciting to see Tanner just going off so far in Birmingham.
And the other guy from Winston, Shane Murphy, he had a pretty spectacular month too. 5 starts, 30.2 innings, only 17 hits, 4 earned runs.
Yeah.
Only four walks to 22 strikeouts. I mean, that's right up there with Tanner's numbers.
100%. Shane Murphy just keeps impressing. And Shane Murphy is such a cool pitcher because this stuff doesn't jump out at you. This is a 14th round guy from community college from 3 years back. And this stuff in general is just not really like, you know, he's not a guy that jumps out, honestly. Like, and that's not a bad thing, right? Like, it's just kind of a blend of stuff. It's great command. It's, you know, lefty, funky. He just gets the job done, and he throws with such continual consistency and command. In those four walks across his last five starts, there's not a lot of guys in Double A, regardless of where they're at in their career development, that are only walking four guys across five starts, 30 plus innings at the Double A level, right? He's going deep into his starts. He's working. He's attacking batters. He's minimizing his pitch count, right? Like, he's just doing all the right things right now. And Ian says it's curveball. Yeah, I mean, the breaking ball has definitely looked good in some of his last few starts. And I still don't think it's like I don't think he has a plus pitch in his arsenal. But if you can have a plus curveball and then just an average consistently commanded at four, three or four offerings, right? Like, you're going to be able to succeed. And I think as a left-hander, he's sneaky only 24 too. I think that Shane Murphy gives off you told me he was 26. I might believe you. He's being, his career development, but 24 years old and just continues to just churn out. I think Shane Murphy deserves to be in Charlotte, to be honest, for what he's been doing this season.
Yeah. Absolutely. One other pitcher I want to talk about, which is a guy that you have been really fired up about out of the bullpen, Zach Franklin. And I looked at his numbers.
Yeah, did you see those numbers for the month?
Wow. 9.2 innings, 22 strikeouts to 5 walks, and 2 earned runs. It's just insane.
Zach Franklin's a dude, honestly. Zach Franklin is seriously a dude. The numbers have been great. I mean, all season, but even last year, you saw the glimpses of it, right? He's got one of the better fastballs in minor league baseball, a ton of movement on it. Shout out to Uncle Ted. It's got a lot of IVB, a lot of induced vertical break for Zach Franklin. He keeps it up in the zone. He has a ton of ride to it and just gets outs with it every time. The zoo guy, in the chat. This was a guy who the White Sox, it was not a high-end signing, right? A senior, I believe a fifth-year signing of a guy in the 10th round, right? So this was a money-saving pick, but had a lot of success in college with some of his stuff. And this season as a whole, I mean, last year you saw 75 strikeouts across 50 innings for Franklin. And then this year, you come in and you got 48 strikeouts now across 31 frames in Double A, especially with the past, month, you said. The past month being 22 strikeouts in less than 10 innings. I mean, are we serious? That's striking out, more guys than not that he gets out, he's striking out, right? So it's been really fun to see. I think Franklin's another guy that let's just see it, man. I mean, this bullpen's going to be awesome in Chicago. I'm getting more fired up the more I talk about it. Like, Zach Franklin's 26 years old. Put him on the 40-man and replace one of the guys at the deadline with Zach Franklin, and I'm there for it. I'm all – you don't need to see this type of pitcher in Charlotte, right? He's a high fastball guy. He's going to keep just, doing what he's doing. He's going to get your strikeouts. Yeah, he might have some command issues here and there. He might have some flaws, but like, this is not a guy that needs to see Charlotte. This is a guy you can put in Chicago and Palish got a shot, right? Like, you can just see what happens. And I'm excited to see what happens for Franklin, because I do think he's been, one of the better relievers in the system for the last two seasons now, and will get a shot in Chicago, whether it's this year or next year at some point.
Yeah, you're talking about a guy who recorded 29 outs in the month of June, 22 by strikeout.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Yeah. So,
all right. Moving on to the hitting side, I was pleasantly surprised to see the two names at the top of the leaderboard for the month of June in terms of batting average. William Bergola and Caden Connor, 308 and 306, respectively.
Yeah. Did you look how many strikeouts William Bergola has in the month of June?
Yeah. That's amazing. One strikeout compared to 8 walks.
Yeah, I mean, William Bergoglio is an interesting player because it's hard for me to rank him high on a prospect board because you're never going to see a ton of impact from him, right? And that's where it's tricky, because you need some, you need some level of impact to be a big league regular player. At the same time, he has 16 strikeouts this season and 1 in the past month, right? The dude does not strike out. He doesn't whiff, right? The whiff rate, it's crazy, right? So you got a guy who's walking more than he's striking out. He's stolen 20 bags already this season. He stole 27 last year, right? He has 15 doubles, so it's not like he's not getting any impact. He's driving the ball from gap to gap. He's just not going to be a guy who puts the ball out of the park. He has one career home run, right? He's just going to consistently find a way to put the ball in play and to give you good at bats and to not strike out. And yeah, that's probably not necessarily a big league everyday player, but the glove's been good too. Ian just said this year. I mean, I don't know. I'm very curious to see. Oh, I think he was mentioning Caden Connor there with Bergoglio, great glove. Exactly. It's such an interesting profile and a hard one to rank highly among prospects. But at the same time, if he can be a high-end defensive middle infielder, he's not going to strike out. He's going to steal you some bags. He's going to hit for good contact. You know, I'm willing to keep seeing that. And again, like, he's also, what, 20? Is he 21 yet? He's 20 still. He's 20 this entire season. Wow. So if Bergoglio, if his approach and his hit tool, if he can get a little bit of impact, if you can squeeze 5 to 10 homers out of that frame as he continues to grow and become a little stronger in the next few years, that's a big league piece for sure. With that defense and that approach and that hit tool, like, you're looking at a high-end contact hitting elite defensive middle infielder. You want to see a little impact. I'm waiting for just a little impact out of him. But it's been really solid. Even in the ups and downs this season, it hasn't been a great season, but you're still seeing the makings of multiple really good tools from Bergoglio.
Yeah. It's pretty cool. All right. There's a pop quiz for you. Who led Birmingham in extra base hits for the month of June?
I'd probably guess Jacob Gonzalez.
You would be right. 7 doubles and a home run.
Yeah, some good signs from Gonzalez for sure. I mean, 25 games, you're looking at 10 walks, 10 strikeouts. That's the big thing for Gonzalez, right? Like, he was supposed to be an elite approach guy coming out of college, and you need to see that, right? So the walk rate's not super high, but you definitely need to see that kind of, you know, a dip down in strikeouts, a dip up in walks, which we've seen from him. So that's great to see. And he's hitting a lot of doubles. He's hitting a lot of gap-to-gap doubles, and he's putting the ball in play a little more. He's hitting the ball a little bit harder. Again, it hasn't been great, but a 719 OPS from Jacob Gonzalez at the month with much better approach in general, I'll take that from Gonzalez.
Right. And then just a side note, I think people are tired of hearing about Nishida, but when I was looking at the stats for the month of June, I still continue to be blown away by anybody who has more walks than strikeouts. And he had 17 walks to 12 strikeouts for the month. So still has elite plate discipline.
And he's walking a bunch, and he's got a .410 on base percentage. So, you know, still a valuable piece in that Birmingham lineup, even though, you know, the impact there, one extra base hit in the month, it's hard to get by with that, and it's hard to, you know, to really craft a role that way. But he is a versatile defender. He walks a lot, and he continues to provide good at-bats to that lineup.
Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah. All right, heading down to Winston-Salem, Jeff, from the past 30 days. You want to start pitching? You want to start hitting?
Well, we can start pitching. It'll be a brief conversation, unfortunately. Tanner McDougal, 3 great starts before he went to Birmingham. Lucas Gordon struggled a little bit. Then he goes to Birmingham and has a six innings, one hitter.
He was great in Birmingham.
Yeah. And I guess Christian Oppers, the story, 4 starts, a 2.70 ERA. Still, you know, it's been a bit of an adjustment from low A.
Yeah, for sure.
Definitely showing signs.
Yeah.
And still the arm of probably the greatest interest there.
Yeah, definitely for Oppers. I mean, there's obviously we talked about McDougal. You know, I think there's a couple other guys to talk about, but Oppers is definitely the headliner there, I would say, just because, you know, you've got a guy who he's still settling in for sure. But you got to remember, Oppers has, you know, came into this season with no affiliated starts under his belt, right? So it was a guy who, you know, he was in the Complex League all of last season. He gets to Kannapolis and only makes 5 starts there. So this is a 20-year-old who with 5 starts in single A goes to high A after being a junior college pick, right? So like, I'm not too worried about his numbers. The last 2 starts have looked a lot better. He's been looking a lot better there. He's been developing. He's been a little more consistent. He's kind of been finding that groove. The command seems to be kind of really gaining steam the past week, the past 2 starts, I think, especially. So Opper, I'm, you know, still very excited to watch where it goes. The command hasn't quite been there yet, but I think he's going to settle in throughout the season. Again, like, he'll finish the season in Winston too. Like, there's no reason to push him past Winston this year. He's 20 years old and he, you know, was not even expected to move this quickly, right? So I think he'll be in Winston the whole season. And I think that come, you know, August or something, we're going to start to see him looking a little bit better for that Winston team. We talked about him a lot last week too. That's another guy who I think is, you know, I keep looking at my prospect, my top 30 and saying, oh, does Opper really need to be behind that guy? Not really. He really doesn't need to be behind that guy. Like, there's, you know, and you know, even guys that have been in the system for a while, like it's tough to rank like a, you know, a Brian Ramos, right? Like I for multiple years had Brian Ramos in the top 10 of the system and he's been slowly falling. And at this point, like, am I more excited about a Tanner McDougal or a Brian Ramos? probably right. Tanner McDougal, and same thing goes for Opper, right? Like that's kind of where we're at this point. So it's an interesting thing to keep an eye on and just keep tracking for us here. But I do think that the guy there is Opper to be watching more than anybody. Beyond Opper, though, a couple pitchers to mention out of the bullpen. I want to give a quick shout to Mark McLaughlin, who got promoted to Birmingham, but it was really good in his last handful of stretch in Winston, and just really all season in Winston. He's been pretty solid out of that bullpen, and has now got his bump to Birmingham this past week, as reported by Ian. So he's now going to be in Birmingham. Interested to see 2022 pick, but a seventh round guy. This wasn't this wasn't a pick that was necessarily going to be kind of a throwaway or anything. Like he was a pretty decently regarded pitcher coming out of Tennessee at the time, and a guy who was a seventh rounder and expected to be a piece, and he's been kind of back in this bullpen role. He kind of shifted to a bullpen role pretty early, I believe. I think he only was starting games his first professional season, but last year a pretty decent season. The command was still drifting, but not a bad year for him in Kannapolis. And then this season he comes into Winston and looked really good, and is now 24 years old in Birmingham there. Another bullpen guy, Phil Fox has really put it together, Jeff. I didn't realize. I knew his numbers had been ticking up, but I didn't realize just how good Phil Fox has been the past month in Winston-Salem. His last month in Winston, 10 and a two-thirds innings, 3 hits, 1 run, no walks, 13 Ks. He has been lights out, and this was my favorite guy of all the relief pitching prospects the White Sox drafted. There was a handful of relievers this draft that was last year in the draft, and it was a little confusing. It was like, there's a lot of guys coming out of the bullpen from this draft class, and you get a little weary with a relief draft pick because it's like, how valuable can that really be? But Phil Fox was one guy I really liked the makeup of. A really interesting, unique fastball from him, and just he's kind of starting to really get the feel for his secondaries now. He's been great, and I think that's another guy who, even though he was just drafted last year, like I wouldn't mind seeing him in Birmingham's bullpen soon enough.
Yeah, I think there's, I think there's a little bit of shortage of quality arms in low A and high A, so yeah. I think that's the only thing that holding Phil back, as well as a couple guys in Kannapolis that we're going to talk about. It's time to see him in Birmingham, see what he can do against a little bit higher competition.
Yeah. Any more shouts from that pitching staff in Winston?
No, I think that's it on the pitching side.
Yeah, I think that's about all we got. On the hitting side in the past 30 days, we've talked about him plenty. We don't need to harp on him too much. Sam Antonacci's still awesome. He's still just a fun player. He's still just the engine of that team in terms of the lineup right now. But 882 OPS in the month of June in 20 games. Just keeps doing his thing there. Honestly, he really does. It's good plate discipline, 11 walks, 14 strikeouts, stolen bases, 10 stolen bases in the month, at some degree of power, right? 2 homers, 2 doubles, a triple, right? Some extra base hits, right? Like it's not quite the same profile because he is going to whiff more than Bergoglio, but you're getting some more impact than Bergoglio. So that's kind of the interesting thing with Antonacci there. And that's why I personally have an Antonacci slightly above a Bergoglio in terms of a prospect ranking, because you can see the impact a little bit more with Antonacci. And I think you still have a little more room for power there, where he has some moments where you really start to see the power shine through at times. He popped a 106 homer a few weeks ago. Like that's something you're not getting out of Bergoglio, and that's something that Antonacci's starting to show a little bit more of, and he didn't really show a ton of in college. And you're seeing over the past year a little bit more consistent development with him in his, impact the plate in addition to the elite hit tool and the discipline.
Yeah, 5 extra base hits in June, and that may not sound like a lot to our listeners and viewers, but the reality is that's a lot for Winston-Salem. When you consider that Braden Montgomery led the team with 8. I know that on your Just Baseball podcast, you gave Sam a little love to a national audience and other places. I'm reading and hearing more about Sam. I think he's starting to get a lot of national recognition now, because it's just been a consistently solid season from start to finish, and there have been no lulls of note. It's really been impressive.
Yeah, no, 100%. I'm with you there on that front. And then the other two that have kind of led the team in offense, despite some ups and downs, still a pretty solid month, all things considered, for Braden Montgomery. It was definitely that beginning of June period where he was really struggling. I think it was the end of May into the beginning of June when Braden went through that really tough 2 weeks in Winston. But it's bounced back well. Overall in the month, still hitting .279. He's got a .791 OPS, 3 homers, 3 doubles, 2 triples, right? So 7 extra base hits or 8 extra base hits in that span. 20 strikeouts is a bit high. You want to see that strikeout rate start to come down a little bit. But at the same time, I think that you're still getting pretty consistent production out of Brady Montgomery. And the other one is Sammy Zavala. Sammy Zavala is turning in a pretty good month. And I think I've always been kind of low on Zavala generally compared to the consensus maybe, but still 20 years old. He turns 22, he turns 21 in a couple weeks here, but still 20 years old and has put together a pretty – it's put together a very solid past month, right? I mean, in 23 games in June, he hit 293, 792 OPS, 10 walks in that span. It's good to see that walk rate come up because that's kind of one of his calling cards has been his approach. Three home runs as well has been really nice to see for Zavala because you want to see some impact there with that profile for Sammy Zavala.
Yeah, yeah. It's good to see. Definitely trending in the right direction, much more competitive at bats. He's impacting the ball a lot more. Defense has always been spectacular, and it continues to be. And then the last guy I want to point out is just a nice bounce-back month for Jackson Appel. Hit 317. No extra base hits, but 462 on base clip. So good month for Jackson. I'm still high on him.
Yeah, solid month there for sure. That's all I got in Winston. Kannapolis, we can – you want to start on the hitting side or the pitch or the pitching side?
You know, I love that pitching staff. Let's go there. They've got a couple arms that just are
spectacular. Let's do it. Who's been your? I mean, there's a couple you could pick here. Who's been your favorite watch so far, at least in June?
I have not been able to see Luis Reyes as much as I'd like, but what a month he's had. Just outstanding. For the month, he's got a 0.31 ERA over five starts.
It's been nasty. I'm dying to get some data on him, and I'm hoping I'm going to get some more data for him. I think I can get some here in the near future. But Luis Reyes has been super impressive. Like you said, you know, one run allowed across his last four starts. He's making long starts too. It's not like they're short starts. Like he's going deep in games. He's just continuing to really just churn good outings. His four starts in June, 7 innings, 5 innings, 7 innings, 6 innings, no more than 4 hits allowed in any given game. The walks are down, you know, it's only one or two walks per game, which you love to see. He had a number of 3-walk games early in the season, right? You can get by with a walk or two a game. When you get to rise up the levels, once you get to that 3 walks a game mark, that's kind of where that limit is, right? Most pitchers in the big leagues, you can get away with 2 walks in a game. Once you get to that 3 part, then a little bit of a different story. So, you know, for him, I think it's great to keep the walks in check. And he's been lights out, Jeff. And you know, this is a guy who's, what is he? He's 19, I believe, still. I think he's going to be 19 this entire season. He's not 20 until the offseason, right? So for a 19-year-old, if he spends the entire season in Kannapolis and he does a solid, great. Awesome.
Right, right. And then the other guy is Grant Umberger, which is interesting. Here's the college arm. The older guy, 238 ERA over four starts. In those four starts, 22.2 innings, 4 walks, 29 strikeouts.
Yeah. So does anybody know why Grant Umberger is in single A?
Yeah, I would have bet the ranch that as soon as the first half of the season ended and, you know, the first half pennant race was over, I thought, man, he was on his way for sure. To Winston,
I would have thought. I mean, he's been awesome, but it's fun to see him on that team. But I don't really get why he's there still.
Well, and you look at the Winston staff, and there's such a shortage of starters there, and I guess there's just a little bit of shortage of starters at our two lowest levels, and that's
all. But there's the thing is, it's interesting because there's really not. There's a lot of guys making starts, and I feel like there's a lot of guys that could be making starts too. But I guess there's a handful of injuries from that draft class last year too, and some guys that are not getting quite as many innings as I thought they would, probably because they're working through some stuff potentially.
Yeah, they were in the last couple of weeks. They were struggling with a lot of injuries. Some guys were on the IL and several weren't. But and also they had a virus going through the clubhouse, which also kind of hurt the pitching staff. But I continue to wait to see if Matthias Lacombe and a couple other arms who are performing well in Arizona make their way to Kannapolis so we can start moving these arms up to Winston-Salem and replenish the starting staff there. just dying for help.
That's why I want to touch on some of the ACL guys next. We'll get to hitting, but I that's where I want to get with some of these guys, because they're, in my opinion, there's three or four players in the complex that could legitimately be a big piece for Kannapolis. And I think that it would be, yeah, I think there's a lot to like in the complex right now. So I think that's the thing with Kannapolis, is hopefully a couple of those guys and then a couple of the draft guys, right? Because you'd assume a couple of the top, you know, college draft guys, right? So come late July, there should be 4 to 5 new players between the draft and the complex, at least, if not more than that, right, that are needing to get to Kannapolis sooner than later, which should push up the Umbergers and some of the other guys at that level that are just kind of either too old for the level or just too good for it. Another shot on the pitching side, Blake Shepperson, one of my guys. Blake Shepperson's a dude who's been – I had him on an interview for Future Sox last year when he got drafted, and, you know, really just a Class A guy, and has just been, you know, super kind throughout his process since he got drafted by the team. Shepperton's last handful of games, he's really settling in. He's really finding himself, which is cool to see out of the bullpen. When his stuff is on, he is pretty electric, high 90s with a really nice slider. This is a guy who was, you know, he was barely pitched in the last couple of years. So I think that he is someone who didn't really have his bearings under him in terms of what he was doing when he got to the level. He goes to the dev list, he goes back, he works on some stuff, he works through some things. And then I was talking to him a bit the other day, and he was saying that since he got back off the dev list, it has been a totally different situation for him, and he feels way more comfortable than he's been, because, you know, in those number of games, right? So he came back off the dev list the same day, came back off the dev list on the 13th of May, and since then, a 0.69 ERA across 13 Ooh. Innings with 16 strikeouts. So since he came off the dev list, Blake Shepperton has been a different pitcher and has been the type of upside of a reliever that I really, you know, liked coming out of the draft as a late round pick, right? So I think that's another guy who has been great in Kannapolis, and I'm very curious to see where the rest of the season takes him, because at his age, he could easily move up like a Jack Young to Winston and be on that same timeline as a college reliever.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned Jack. He was another guy I was going to give a little shout out to. He was phenomenal in Kannapolis. Then he had, unfortunately, he was on the injured list the pivotal week when they needed to, where they lost 3 walk-off games and fell out of first place. But then he got promoted, went to Winston, and he just came off a 3-inning outing, which is great to see. Yeah,
100%. A couple hitters in Winston, or in Kannapolis, pardon me, before we get to some complex guys I want to touch on real quick. George Walkout is the story of the month, I think, in general here, right? I think with in Kannapolis recently, it's been great to see just what he's been doing, because we've talked about this so many times that George, you just got to be patient. This is such a unique profile and such a unique player that with George Walkout, it was always going to take a little bit of time for him to really figure it out. He has shown signs all season, right? Like, you've seen the signs of growth throughout the season. It's been noticeable, I think. I think you've seen the approach get better. You talk to him, the approach has gotten better. He's stealing more bags. He looks more comfortable in the outfield, right? Like, there's a lot of things he's doing well. And now this month, you start to see that come alongside some more impact and some of that power. 4 home runs in the month, 3 big home runs, you know, four, you know, he's starting to show a little bit more of the combination, right? So you've gotten a little snippets of things. You got the first month of the year where he was running a ton. He was really active in the field. He was struggling still a lot. Then you got this month where he's hitting a little bit more. He's slowing down with the speed a little, but you're seeing the walk rate go up. You're seeing the strikeout rate come down a little bit. It's going to continue to be give and take with Walkow, but an 840 OPS in the month is a good sign from him for sure.
Yeah, the first, I guess, 20 days, first two and a half, three weeks of June, he was outstanding. And then he got sick. He got strep throat. And I think his numbers have tanked a little bit because of that. But it's been an outstanding month, a big turnaround. And I think once he gets fully healthy again, he'll continue that upward trend. I'm really fired up to see what he can do. The strikeout rate, 25% thereabouts for the month of June. That's a huge improvement. Really fired up about George's month of June.
Yeah, definitely some positive signs there. Like you said, there's a lot of things to build on there for him. Still a long way to go, but you know, I think in the month of June, right, 11% walk rate, 22% strikeout rate, 141 WRC+, like, that there's some really positive signs there from Walkow. Lyle Miller-Green and TJ McCants, two of the draft guys from last year, two older guys, two guys that are going to have to really rake to make it up the league because they both just are, you know, older college guys still, and they're in single A, right? But they've both been raking. They're both hitting 300 in the month. You know, both of those guys are walking a bunch. Particularly TJ McCants has a really nice return coming off an injury, and then he was in Arizona for a little while. But now you're looking at a guy who, you know, he walked one less time than he's 15 walks, 16 strikeouts for him. You posted a little bit of a tidbit on him on Twitter. This is a guy who's just been really solid. Both these veteran guys have been very solid over the past month, which is nice to see.
You buried the lead. Who's leading? Who led the team in June?
In what?
In hitting, batting average.
Is it not Lyle?
Isn't it Ryan?
It's Ryan Burrows. Wow.
Yeah.
Not too shabby.
And I gotta own up to this. I like Ryan. I think he's a great guy personally. I was beginning to feel about Ryan like you were about Sammy Zavala. Like maybe he's not gonna measure up to all the love he was getting when he was signed.
I
just wasn't seeing it. And then he's really put it together this last month. 316 batting average, 360 OBP, 9 out of 10 stolen bases, still only 3 walks to 21 strikeouts. So still work to be done, but definitely a huge improvement.
Yeah. No, definitely a big improvement from Burrows for sure, which is nice to see because this is a guy, he's always had the tools, right? He's always been a fast guy, pretty twitchy, pretty solid swing. He's adjusted. But yeah, you know, it's good to see for sure. You got to do something about that 2.5 walk rate, 25% strikeout rate. Like that's not going to be sustainable, especially for a guy who's not going to have the most impact, right? He's always going to be a little bit more hit over power for a guy of Burrows' stature, right? So you're going to have to bring that walk rate up. You're going to have to bring that strikeout rate down for his guy for a guy like him. But nice to see him finding a little bit of groove and at least making, you know, more consistent impact at the plate.
Yeah. And then finally, a personal favorite of mine is Romy Gonzalez, also a solid month, 286.
Romy, that's a former White Sox, Romy Gonzalez.
Sorry. Romy Hernandez. Ronnie Hernandez, sorry.
No, you're good. Shout out Romy Gonzalez, still hanging around in the big leagues, honestly.
Yeah,
pretty crazy.
He's having a decent
big league career. It's pretty crazy, actually.
A really strong, a weak side platoon in Boston and doing well.
I always
liked Romy.
Ronnie
is at 286, 407 OBP, 15 walks to 17 strikeouts. So
nice. That's solid.
I always loved his swing. It's a really pretty swing.
It's a nice swing for sure. I wish he had more power because he seems like a guy who should, and it just hasn't quite come yet. But I think at some point you're going to see Ronnie start to tap into some of that power. He's a big dude. He's strong. He's got the ability to hit for some power and just hasn't really gotten there yet. But I do think he will get there at some point.
Yeah.
Want to get to a couple of a handful of guys in the lower levels, the complex levels, who I'm going to pull up right now because I want to touch on a few of these guys, just guys that we are keeping an eye on and guys that I think should be there sometime soon. Somebody mentioned there's a few different people mentioning Alexander Albertus in the comments. Alexander Albertus is a guy who it was weird because we saw him on the Canny roster, but then he wasn't on the Canny roster. He's still doing rehab games in the complex, right? So I'm curious to see, but Albertus has been really good, Jeff. This is the third piece of that Eric Fetty Michael Kopech deal, and I love when people react to trades too quickly, to be honest, because it makes me laugh a little. And White Sox fans were really mad about that deal last year, and I didn't think it was the best deal at the time, but you look at it now. How about now?
Oh, you're back. You're back. You got so angry.
You
lost your audio.
Yeah, exactly. People really hated that trade. People really hated that trade. And I'm not saying that it's going to be a slam dunk of a trade, but Eric Fetty is pretty whatever for the Cardinals right now. He's been okay, but he's fine. And Michael Kopech's been hurt all season, which is, as we know, kind of the story of Michael Kopech, right? So here we are with the White Sox best hitter on the lineup, probably being Miguel Vargas, maybe. And he's, you know, was from that trade. Haroldo Perez has had some ups and downs, but is still a pretty high-end prospect within the farm system. And Alexander Albertus, we haven't even got to see play yet in the organization because of that brutal injury he had last year. His first 8 games at the complex, 964 OPS, hitting 333. Obviously, 8-game sample, super small. But I think Albertus should be back with Kannapolis in the next week or two is my guess. I don't know. It seems a little bit unclear about his injury situation, but I do think he'll be back sooner than later in Kannapolis, and I'm excited to see what he has to look like at that level for sure. Then from there, a couple other guys at the Complex League that are worth mentioning. The first one is Adrian Heal. And I mentioned him to you a little while ago. I mentioned him on the episode with Dylan last week. Adrian Heal just keeps hitting. He really does. He has been mashing all season at the Complex level. 40 games now at the Complex, a 915 OPS at that level, 16 stolen bases, 18 extra base hits in those 40 games. It's homers, it's doubles, it's speed. He strikes out a lot, and that's going to be something that we need to keep evaluating from him. But like, everybody strikes out a lot in the Complex League, to be honest. I mean, that's really what happens with a lot of these young guys. Adrian Hill is 19 years old the rest of the season. He could be playing and should be playing pretty much every day, in my opinion, in Kannapolis very soon, because he's put up great numbers. He had a good season last year. This is also a guy that was an absolute standout in the Dominican League. When he was coming out of the White Sox, signed him in 2022 or whatever, I think it was a 2022 or 2023 class. In 2023 in the Dominican League, he had a 998 OPS with 16 extra base hits. And then last year takes a bit of a step back in the ACL. And then this year comes into the ACL again, and through 40 games has been one of the best hitters in that league. I think Adrian Heal should be, you know, starting fairly regularly for Kannapolis as soon as possible, honestly.
And what was his primary position?
He's a funny one because he's bounced around a little bit. This is a guy who he did not log a single game. I remember when he was signed, he was listed as a catcher slash infielder. And he didn't log a single game behind the plate until this season. And now he's catching in Arizona, which is crazy. So he's playing a combination of catcher and first base mostly now. It seems like he's grown out of third base a little. He played a lot of third base last year in Arizona, but he's been mostly catching and playing first this year. So I have known nothing about his defense. I won't pretend to know anything about his defense. But the fact that he's catching now while putting up a 9-something OPS in Arizona, it's pretty fun. I'd like to check it out at least.
Yeah, well, that'd be cool. Excited to see these guys come to Arizona, come to Kannapolis. Those guys show up in the next couple of weeks, and then right behind them, the draft picks. It's an exciting time.
Exactly. And then the other guy to mention from that core, or from Arizona at least, is Mathias Lacumbe, who we've been talking about for a bit at this point, right? But Lacumbe is just been, he keeps building on his starts, and they're being super cautious with his innings and the way that they're using Lacumbe. But at the same time, he keeps putting up start after start and quality start after start. It just has been one after the next, right? He's only throwing three or four innings each start, but you know, his four starts in June, a 1.38 ERA across four starts. He's not walking anybody, two walks, 16 strikeouts in the month. And Lacumbe has just been great. Maybe it's just because the innings hold up, really just trying to work on himself, but a 23-year-old guy, from France and then a community college guy, like, I'm very, very ready to see him in Kannapolis. Above all else, like, he's the one guy, if I could pick, that I would put in Kannapolis from the Complex League for sure.
Elijah, are you aware of any other arms who will be ready soon if they're not ready now for Kannapolis?
Yeah, another one to mention is Jake Curtis, who I don't know a ton about. He was an undrafted guy, an Illinois product. Was signed, I believe, just this past offseason. He was signed as a minor league free agent last year because he played in the summer league. He was a college guy. He went to Memphis. And Curtis has been really good in the Complex as well. This is another guy just to keep a little bit of an eye on, who, you know, in the past month, 13 innings, four runs allowed, and 20 strikeouts, four walks in that span. So Jake Curtis is another guy I don't know a ton about, but a 23-year-old right-hander who, like, you know, you've got two 23-year-old pitchers that are dominating in the Complex League. Like, let's see it in Kannapolis. So I think we probably will see Curtis at some point in the near future as well. And then another one that keeps getting mentioned, I got to give Robert a shout out here because Robert's mentioned his name a few times now. Maximo Martinez. Maximo Martinez was another piece. He came over with Aldrin Batista. He was actually in that same trade with Aldrin Batista from the Dodgers 2 years back. Last year. And then he has been injured. He was out for a while, and then he has made his first start recently. So that's a cool little note there for Maximo Martinez, who last season he made a couple outings in Arizona, but then went down with the injury, and has come back now and has made his first appearance in Arizona a couple days ago on the 27th. And throws one inning with one hit and two strikeouts. So not bad.
Don't I recall that the return was international signing money?
It was some of the money that let the Dodgers get whoever they got in their international class. But you know, Aldrin Batista has been dealing with an injury all season. We haven't seen him pitch much. But Maxi Martinez and Aldrin Batista, you know, are both guys that were at the time decently regarded prospects. And I'm curious to see what happens with Martinez.
Yeah. And, you know, assuming Aldrin comes back and picks up where he left off, he's a stud.
Yeah, 100%. Those are the guys at that level. Denny Lima, that's a nice mention by Adrian. I was just looking through the roster and saw that as well. Another guy in the complex league who's been pretty solid, pretty decent. He's in his last four outings. He's tossed 17 innings, 16 strikeouts, 7 walks. I don't know a ton about him. I'd have to look into Lima a little bit, but you know, a little bit of a younger guy in comparison to those days. He's 20 years old, a Dominican Republic guy. So he's been good in the complex though. So another guy that could maybe get a cup of coffee in Kannapolis sometimes later this season. If not next year, he definitely will get a shot in Kannapolis. Quick mention, the Dominican Summer League for the White Sox. It's super. I try to put as little stock as possible in Dominican Summer League stats because they are really hard to get any data on. They're just... It's kind of hard to be credible in terms of what you're going to see from there. You'll see some guys put up crazy numbers and they'll be just, you know, they'll be dominating. Their numbers will be nuts. And then you will never hear the name again the second they come stateside. With that said, the White Sox have a number of hitters that are really showing out in the DSL so far this summer. Through 17 games, a number of guys, Christian Gonzalez is one who was a $500,000, $550,000 signing bonus guy in last year's class out of Venezuela. Last year, he really struggled in the Dominican Summer League. And this year, through 17 games, Jeff, do you want to take a guess on what Christian Gonzalez is hitting?
340.
481. super. And that this is why we can't look at Dominican Summer League stats and really judge them, because the stats there can be pretty misleading at times, in my opinion. But I'll take a 481 batting average from a guy who was a pretty high level international signing out of Venezuela. So someone to at least keep an eye on there for sure. And then a number of other guys that have been hitting really well for the White Sox at that level, which is nice to see for definitely. There's a Jordani Soto is one who's been hitting pretty well for the organization and has done generally a good job there. That's a pretty decently regarded signing. A couple of other guys. Yeah, Christian Gonzalez leads the league in OPS, actually, for the Dominican Summer League, which is cool. Cool to see there. And then Eduardo Herrera is one we should definitely mention, because he has a chance to crack my top 30, to be honest with you, because this guy was a... I mean, and that's why it's so hard, because I don't have any numbers on this. There's no data behind it. There's no data I can really get or find from the Dominican Summer League. So it's tricky to really gauge what that's going to look like. But at the same time, like, this was a guy who was over $2 million signing last year. That means something, right? Like, you have to put some stock with the international guys in how much they sign for. And Eduardo Herrera out of Venezuela being a huge signing in his second season in the Dominican Summer League. He had a really rough year last year. In his second season so far through 20 games is a 989 OPS with 16 walks, 19 strikeouts, 5 extra base hits. You're really starting to see a lot of what you know, we're hoping to see last year for Herrera, who at the time was 17. Now he's 18, and you're really seeing a lot of what you kind of were dreaming on for the number one signing in the White Sox class there.
Wow. Yeah. That's exciting. Yeah.
Yeah. And then last shot is Frank Maesis. I mean, again, these numbers are crazy, but like, Frank Maesis is another guy who, you know, 950 OPS now in the start of the Dominican League. So a lot of guys really hitting there for the White Sox. And then I mentioned all those guys, and the most intriguing, and the guy that I'm just dying to get some numbers on, and I'm going to pester Arm about it so I can try and get some numbers and see what this data is looking like for him. Yopal Rodriguez for the White Sox in the pitching side of things has been really, really fun to track. I don't know if you know, made another outing recently. I'm trying to check if he pitched again this past week, but Yopal Rodriguez I think this is a great point being made in the chat, and to remind everyone what I was just saying again from Doug here. You really don't know much about the DSL guys. It's really hard to put much stock in them, but the numbers are fun. It's exciting. I enjoy it. We can enjoy it a little bit, even if it's not a ton of value, right? Yopal Rodriguez, Jeff, in his first 6 appearances, this is a guy who was, you know, a decent signing. I think about a $400,000 signing, if I'm remembering right. 17 years old, out of Cuba, right? So he's super young. He's going to be 17 till next spring. In his first 6 outings in the DSL, 14 2/3, 4 hits, no runs, two walks, 15 strikeouts. So he's only given up six base runners in six appearances while striking out 15. So again, super early, hard to know. I will know more with pitchers. I feel like I can gauge a lot more if I can see some data, because regardless of the league and regardless of the competition, if your stuff is good, your stuff is good. And right. I think Yolmer Rodriguez must have pretty good stuff, but it's hard to gauge if those results are you know, a result of his stuff until I see some of those numbers with it. But yeah. Still, regardless, impressive.
Yeah, and you know, what all of this, all this great insight that you just shared makes me remember is that we have a new regime running the yes. international department, and I think we're seeing the results of it. Just it sounds like they really are killing it.
That is a wonderful point, Jeff. And we don't know yet. We don't know yet if these players will translate into any right. sort of big league success.
Of course.
But the fact that the numbers and results from those rosters in the Dominican and in the, you know, in the ACL and in the DSL, seeing them be as good as they are, even compared to the last 5 years, like there hasn't been players putting up these numbers on these rosters in a long time. So it's all super exciting. At the very least, it's exciting to see a new layer added to the mix of everything within the White Sox organization. And that's something we're going to see through the draft and just continue to see at every step of the way with this organization, with the big league level. I don't want to say I'm fully bought in, because I'm not fully there, but I believe in the direction of this organization a lot more than I think the average fan does right now. And that's because you can really see tangible adjustments and success and changes at each stage of the organization right now. And that's something you weren't seeing a couple years ago, in my opinion.
Now, I'm inclined to agree with you about the confidence in the organization. And there are a couple of things that have brought me to that decision. And one is the decisiveness and the boldness of the promotions, whether, you know, and Grant Taylor's a great example of that, but several other guys, you know, Mydroth going up quick sooner than later. I love that in the organization, that they're willing to do that.
Yeah, 100%. So we're going to keep seeing where it goes. We appreciate everybody checking in with us and hearing about all the top players in June. And in general, like I think that there's a lot of fun stuff coming up. I'm going to have Pete Flaherty join me at some point for a little bit of a draft special. I'm going to record that with him soon. And then we're going to have a lot more stuff. We're going to hopefully have our Tanner McDougal interview coming up, talking to him this week or next week, potentially. So we've got a lot of fun content. And then make sure you're checking in with the draft. James put out another mock draft today. So futuresox.net, you can find our most recent mock draft. James does an excellent job just checking in with people around the league, seeing where things are at, and seeing where the mocks go and where the White Sox could potentially go with the draft. I'm hoping for a prep shortstop. I'm very much on the wagon of trying to get one of those upside young shortstops and just seeing what happens. And we will see what else happens. Any last thoughts from you here, Jeff?
No, I think it's all exciting. We've got the draft coming up. You know, you and I are big supporters of what Mike Shirley's been doing and the talent that's been coming in the organization. And I think you just highlighted a lot of interesting international guys. So it's really exciting. I tell you another thing that's got me really fired up. I know we need to get off the air, but I'm really fired up about the fact that these guys go work in Arizona with Ryan Fuller and Brian Bannister and come back dramatically improved. I think there's just a lot of evidence that we've got a regime in place of a lot of really talented people who know what they're doing and are making big inroads and turning this thing around.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm excited. We're going to see what happens. I can't wait for draft day. It's going to be super fun. I'm going to be out there in person in Atlanta, super fired up for that, doing some stuff with Just Baseball. Yeah, really excited. I'll be closer towards you in that side of the country. But yeah, really, really pumped for it. It should be a good time. So we got a lot of fun stuff coming up. Stay tuned to Future Sox at Future Sox. I'm at Elijah EV8. You can find Jeff at AAA Jeff. And we will talk to you next time on the Roundup.
Sounds great.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you, guys.